that money. Show me the money on stage.
And that's the thing, right? Well, I know we were coming here to record this, and yet that question has really caught me off guard.
You win some, you lose some for me, but happy for you.
I can do a round off. Put me in. I think it's not actually a magic carpet. Or maybe it's not. Who knows?
It's not actually a magic carpet. What? Hi everyone, welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking about the touring production of Aladdin. Now, we both saw Aladdin 10 years ago at the Ed Mirvish Theater. And I believe
it's pre-Broadway tryout.
And I believe that we talked about this in the summer of... We're kind of interested to see the show again because, you know, been a long time. And after it left Toronto, there was some changes that happened and people seemed to like really enjoy it on the tour. Sorry, on Broadway. So 10 years later, with kind of like a fresh perspective, here we are talking about this Disney theatrical musical. Now, before we get into the musical, I feel like we should have the conversation of what was your relationship with Aladdin before seeing it 10 years ago, seeing it now, all that.
Absolutely. So Aladdin to me is one of the classic Disney theatrical movies. When people are talking about the golden era of Disney animated movies, I'm thinking of Aladdin. I think Aladdin really revolutionized animated movies in that it had a star performance in Robin Williams as the genie. And I really think animated movies before that were not casting these huge name actors and marketing them around these actors the way they do now. And I think Robin Williams as the genie changed the way that animated movies are made and are cast, even because I know he was able to do a lot of improv in the recording studio that shaped the way that that movie ended up being, you know, doing impressions and doing bits and gags, whereas it seemed to be before that they would write a script, actors would come in, do the script, and they would animate that, but they had to animate to what he was giving them on that day. And so for me, that really puts Aladdin in like the upper echelon of Disney animated movies and is a true classic just because it is one of the funniest and just like so much fun. I always loved Princess Jasmine. That was like my favorite Disney princess, Princess Jasmine. I liked her because, you know, she was sassy and she was a little like, she had attitude in a way some of the other princesses didn't have. So for me, Aladdin, you know, top Disney animated movie. So, and it's already a musical, so was excited when they were turning it into a stage musical because it already has these beautiful, you know, Alan Menken, Howard Ashman, / Tim Rice songs that I already know and love. So how could it be bad?
Mm-hmm.
Tara?
I agree with a lot of what you're saying with like the animation, the acting and all that. Aladdin is a little bit of a blind spot for me. It's a movie that I did not watch that much.
Wow.
Or maybe ever. Even yesterday.
My parents were really obsessed with the vault. The Disney vault. My parents were really obsessed
like
with buying
the reopening
yes,
of the vault.
Yes, they were really obsessed with buying VHSs that were going back into the vault.
Yeah.
Which is it's such a foreign concept now with streaming. Like, it's all there now.
Yeah.
But my parents were obsessed with buying, I don't know, like we had the VHSs. My mom's like, we were spending $100 to buy Cinderella because it was going back to the vault.
For sure.
I'm like, okay.
We had the VHSs too, but I don't remember having this one on VHS.
We had them all.
And like,
we had everyone.
Even so, last night, like my brother, like I sat with my brother for this, and he also said, like, I don't think I've seen Aladdin fully through.
So interesting.
We were more of like a Lion King family. Lion King, Toy Story, like Little Mermaid. Not so much like, I mean, I definitely watched Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, but those ones like never were the go-tos. It was always like Lion King was a go-to, and like the Toy Story when it first came out was a go-to, and I loved The Little Mermaid. So this one was kind of just like a blind spot to me. I swear I did a production at camp, which is completely inappropriate.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't really like remember that, but I just like I knew the story. I definitely did not watch the live action, and I definitely will not watch the live action movie.
Starring Toronto's Mina Massoud.
Starring Ryerson alum Mina Massoud, Will Smith, and then I cannot remember the girl's name who played Jasmine, but she was like a Disney woman.
Yes, she was in something else. She was
a Power Ranger.
Yes.
Naomi?
Yeah, didn't she do like Charlie's Angels as well after?
Yeah. I've actually heard from like colleagues that Naomi version, Scott. Naomi Scott, I believe they came into my place of work for an interview when I was there however many years ago, because this movie came out in what
2019?
Year?
2019.
Okay, so yeah, pre-pandemic. And from my coworkers, this version of Jasmine has the most like agency compared to the other ones. They kind of like really like bring her characterization up, which I think we will talk about Jasmine in this musical as well. But yeah, kind of a blind spot for me. And then, yeah, so we both saw this 10 years ago, not together. We did not. Friends.
No, I think we might have known, we might have just met. That was the year we met. 2013.
Yeah, so just a blip in each other's lives. And I remember being excited because, like, having a Disney show come to Toronto is always very exciting. And then when you hear it's pre-Broadway, like, that's always something that, like, I'm interested in. Obviously more so now than I was 10 years ago. But I just remember not loving this show 10 years ago. I was pretty disappointed in it. And that the genie was, like, hands down the best part of Aladdin. Mm-hmm. And 10 years later, I feel the exact same way.
Yeah, I agree. So the interesting thing is there are things that stick out. This was a show we saw over 10 years ago. There are things that stick out from that pre-Broadway production that I was kind of like, that I knew they'd changed, or also that I was watching for them to change and to see what they had done with it. It wasn't hugely different, but there are a few different things. But I think what the takeaway was from that Toronto production was that the genie is the absolute highlight of the show, and to hold him for so long in the first act, they decided not to do that after they left Toronto.
Well, so let's start right at the beginning here. Like, what are your thoughts on adding the genie to the opening number, but then also, like, we don't see him again until the end of act one? Like, is that actually, does that add, is that beneficial to you as a viewer? Like, what does that add for you? Like, I'm just interested to know. We actually didn't sit together, so we haven't really talked about this show at all. So here's our real, authentic first time talking to each other.
I'm fine with them having the genie be the one to introduce the show. I think he is the character that everyone kind of latches onto from Aladdin the most, is this genie. And knowing that otherwise he does not enter basically until 45 minutes, an hour into this show, we need his energy. But at the same time, you're introduced to him, and then the energy does take like a dive until he comes back. Yeah. Yes, I do remember from the original pre-Broadway that Omar Babcock and Kasim, Aladdin's like street friends. Rat friends, are the ones who sing Arabian Nights. I kind of remember, it was in the Ed Mervish, I was in the balcony, and I remember them coming in front of the curtain doing like a piece of choreography across the front of the curtain before it rose and, you know, showed Agrabah. I didn't mind them doing that at the time. But I absolutely understand the decision to beef up the genie's role.
Yeah, so I don't know why, maybe just from like reading different like boards from Broadway World over the years, like a Reddit page here or there, I was under the impression that the genie kind of became the narrator on Broadway, and that's absolutely not the case for this tour. But I don't know why I was under that impression. I don't know who wrote this, but it was like, we're adding him to the opening number so that he becomes that voice that like carries us all the way through. And in my head, before I saw it last night, I was like, oh, that's great. We'll get to see him way more in Act One. And we absolutely do not. Like, it's fine that he's there. I agree. He's like a great presence. I think also it's like a toned back genie, obviously. I was noticing like he's not wearing the full makeup when he comes on for that opening number. Like, the glitter head is not glittered yet. And like the gold eyeshadow is not there. It's kind of just like base makeup before we get to, you know, he's got an hour to sit backstage and do the rest of his face. So like
a lot of time.
He's got time. But yeah, it didn't like add anything for me specifically. Like, if he wasn't there, I don't think I would have felt any differently. But it is also something that, like, for the children that are in the audience, which there are many of them, that's a character that they recognize right off the bat. Yes. So I understand that move.
While we're talking about changes, the other major change, I guess, is they give Princess Jasmine her own song. And when it was in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yes. When it was in Toronto in 2013, they had a song called Call Me a Princess, which everyone agreed basically that it was terrible, which it was. So they added a new song called These Palace Walls, which my opinion on it is it's also pretty bad.
What if I tried? Am I prepared for what's outside? Why shouldn't I fly so far from here? Something awaits me.
I think
it's better than Call Me a Princess, but
Call Me a Princess really made Jasmine seem like a spoiled brat, and this kind of is just like, I'm longing for a new life, but like
I'm
not a princess.
Yes, it's just extremely forgettable as a song. It gives absolutely nothing.
Much are most of Jasmine's scenes in this show.
Unfortunately, because, you know, she is our main female character, one of our only female characters. Every other character in the show is a man. Yeah. And, of course, I understand why you want to give her a song. You want her to have agency. You want to know what's going on. What is her inner life? What's going on in her mind? I don't know if they achieved that with this either. It's annoying when they have these really wonderful songs for other characters, and then your one female character gets an extremely forgettable, like, boring song that no one is thinking about after.
Here's, like, a direct comparison. So a song that was written for this musical, Proud of Your Boy, which becomes, like, the theme throughout the show. There was literally, like, 17 reprises of it yesterday. And I'm not complaining, because I love this song. I've spoken about it on previous episodes as a original song written for this musical. It fits in the Aladdin canon.
This is actually the interesting thing. It was written for the movie and then
It was cut. I feel like we talked about this on our Alan Macon episode.
Probably. It was written for the movie and then cut.
And I definitely spoke on my love for it then. And I'm just like, when you compare...
Because Howard Ashman wrote those lyrics.
Right.
But we still have those Howard Ashman lyrics.
Yeah. So when you compare Proud of Your Boy from Aladdin and then like These Palace Walls for Jasmine, and they're kind of like their I Want songs, his is so much better than hers.
Yes.
Water flows under the bridge. Let it pass. Let it go. There's no good reason that you should believe me. Not yet. I know, but someday and soon I'll make you proud of your boy. Though I can't make myself taller or smarter or handsome or wise, I'll do my best. What else can I do? Since I wasn't born perfect like Dad or you.
Like, sorry, leaps and bounds Chad better Beglin. Than hers.
Sorry to Chad Beglin, who wrote the lyrics for this. I know, but he's the one who did, for the Broadway production, he's the one who came in and did additional lyrics.
So, yeah, I think it already starts Jasmine off on kind of like a weak note because her song is just kind of blah.
Yeah.
But speaking of songs, something I was curious with yesterday, I don't have that original playbill with me.
I do. You do. I'm comparing them right now. I'm looking at the...
much nicer cover.
Can we even see this? I much prefer this original cover with the lamp.
Yeah.
Disney Theatrical often kind of tries to like streamline their logos.
Yes. So it's kind of...
This is the lamp here.
It's
this
the lamp and the lamp. Genie popping out
and
of the lamp.
And then the genie.
But it's giving a little like Lumiere vibes.
Yeah, I see that. I see that with his...
hands.
Like, hand candle things.
Yeah.
Oh, there's one. Okay, I see it now.
Based on the song list, are we like one for one here?
Okay, Arabian Nights, One Jump Ahead, Proud of Your Boy. There was an Arabian Nights reprise, which I think might have happened. Then Call Me a Princess, which is replaced by These Palace Walls. And then, of course, everyone's favorite song, Babcock, Omar, Aladdin, and Kasim.
Is that a joke?
They're in the same spot. A Million Miles Away, both there. Diamond in the Rough, which is Jafar and Iago. Friend Like Me. And then the original one had another Arabian Nights reprise. Oh my god, how many Arabian Nights reprises did we have? And then we go into the finale, which is like Friend Like Me, Pride and Prejudice. I'm also wondering if this tour production is even pared down a little bit from Broadway.
It's very possible, but I was also just about to say that like the program that Steph is reading from is a pre-Broadway, so stuff probably changed.
Things did change, absolutely.
Yeah. But then, we would actually like to see someone that has a Broadway playbill to let us know. One thing. I kind of do remember there being more of Arabian Nights. I feel like Arabian Nights was the theme 10 years ago, where this year, or this tour feels like the theme is
more proud of your boy.
Yeah. And then for Act 2?
Yeah. For Act 2, the two playbills, there's another Arabian Nights reprise between Prince Ali and A Whole New World. But okay. Other than that, it's basically the same.
Okay. So when I spoke to you at intermission and said that there was a couple songs in Act One that I've never heard before in my life, I was absolutely lying because I did hear them 10 years ago.
Yeah, you were 100%.
And the two songs I was referring to was A Million Miles Away and Diamond in the Rough.
Those were also there.
Brand new to me last night.
They're just unmemorable. A Million Miles Away was sweet. A Million Miles Away was sweet. A cute moment. But no, they are both written for the Broadway production. They're not from previous versions. But they are both forgettable.
Yes. Okay, so with that said, what did you think of this production of Aladdin?
Wow, what did I think? Wow, I know we were coming here to record this, and yet that question has really caught me off guard. What did I think? It's hard to explain. I was not very impressed with this production of Aladdin, personally. It was doing everything that Aladdin should do, and yet everything just felt a little bit lacking. The bright spot in the show, and I think generally always, is the genie, and the actor who played the genie, who was Marcus M. Martin, was absolutely wonderful and just brought such amazing energy. But overall, it just felt a little bit like corny or a bit just like, we know you're gonna buy tickets to this, so we're not making this special or exciting in any way.
Yeah.
Does that track?
Yes. I also was, I'm not going to say disappointed, because I honestly did walk in with quite low expectations because of how much I did not like it 10 years ago. And like, really, you'd have to change so much for me to have a different opinion on this show in general. I just felt like it felt a little low budget.
100%.
100%. And I always have this issue with Disney Theatrical because they have so much money. And I felt this way for Frozen before. I felt this way for Beauty and the Beast when it came on tour here. I don't really feel that way for Lion King because those puppets do feel expensive. But maybe that's like the Julie Taymor of it all.
I was going to say, the thing with Lion King is they kind of took a leap with Lion King.
Yeah.
In maybe because they're forced to, because the characters are animals. And so you kind of have to make it a little more interpretive than literal, the way they can do these other shows. But I feel like the one thing that Lion King has over all these things is a director's vision, and these other ones kind of don't. This is no disrespect to Casey Nicola, who I forgot directed this until the tap dancing started. I was like, Casey Nicola directed this. No disrespect to him, because I do think he has a specific style, but 100% agree that their method of adaptation falls short a bit.
Yeah. So I've seen all of the Disney theatricals so far. And
Aida?
Not Aida, sorry. But I feel like that's not on their list of Disney theatricals.
It is.
feel like it's a pop out. It's like Asterix, Aida. But like Hercules? The ones that have been to Broadway. I've only seen Frozen on Broadway. The rest mm-hmm. I've seen here. And I would say that Aladdin ranks the lowest to me in terms of like these adaptations.
It's even lower than Frozen.
I liked Frozen.
I know you're a big Frozen fan generally.
But also like we've talked about Frozen on this podcast before. I think that like so many more of those songs are so much more memorable than these songs. Like mm-hmm. What Do You Know About Love? What an amazing song. Like
as
Monster,
a new song for the Broadway.
Monster?
Yes, I agree. No, these are good. They're good.
So like forget everything else, but like musically it's like way more advanced than A Million Miles Away in these wow. palace walls. Like it's just not comparable to me. Yeah. And then the other thing that I think we should enter into this conversation is a tour. So right. I feel like for a long time a lot of people kind of had opinions on Canadian casts and how Canadian casts just didn't feel like an American cast. It didn't feel like it was the correct caliber for a show. And I will throw Kinky Boots in your face. Mm-hmm. I will throw Come From Away in your face. I will throw this current production of Six in your face, because these tours that have been on the road for a long time now feel a little clunky and messy, and I hate to say it because I think every single person on that stage deserves a job in the theater industry, but guys, you're phoning it in a little bit and it's really distracting to see it on stage. And it just feels a little low budget. And I think it's like really interesting when you compare this to like, we've had many conversations of like, is Broadway the end all be all for these shows? Like, should you be saving your experiences for New York? And for a show like this, I'm going to say yes, and I don't want to be that person to say that.
The number one thing that strikes me a lot with tours, specifically with this tour, which we just saw yesterday, is I find the ensemble specifically gets very sloppy. I'm like, who is the person who is in charge of monitoring this choreography, making sure everyone knows where they need to be, making sure everyone is hitting their counts, hitting their numbers, hitting positions, matching each other? Because a lot of times on tours, when there's big ensemble numbers, big ensemble moments, I'm like, whoa, this is a mess. And I understand it's a hard job. You're going from city to city. Toronto usually has longer runs, but
this
you're
is
going
about
from
a month.
City to city, and you know, you're there for a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time. You're moving. Cast changes are happening all the time, so like the time for rehearsal is not very often. But I am wondering where the dance captain is, and if they're able to truly do their job effectively. And also, you know, you think this premiered on Broadway in 2014, so it's been basically 10 years now. And the last time the director probably worked on this was in 2014. And so now the director's vision and choreography is being passed along from person to person to person, dance captain to dance captain to dance captain. And sometimes I feel like it becomes a game of broken telephone on what we need to be emphasizing or what's a priority for audiences. And there, sometimes I wonder if there's a lack of oversight from higher ups in making sure that the quality of shows stays the same. This sounds bad because I do think everyone on tours is talented and these shows like can be wonderful, but when you're on year five, year six of a tour and you see it in our city, when I end up seeing it, that's something I frequently notice.
Yeah, we are also like snobs. We've talked
Absolutely.
About this before. We've
Absolutely.
Seen a lot of shows, which I think gives us the title to be a theater snob. Like I am allowed to compare productions because of how much I get to see. Whereas like sometimes when I see stuff like this, I'm like, oh man, that's someone's first time seeing a show. And like, do they notice the things that I notice? Maybe not. But like, I kind of hope that they don't. And this is not to say that like this is the definition for like every tour out there, because I actually think in comparison, like a show that we did not love, but like 42nd Street, those dances
was tight.
Were clean.
Tight.
clean. Whereas yes. like no, this felt messy. So like it's not that it can't be done. And I think that just kind of brings me to the main point here of like, I can say all this, we can say all this, but like, doesn't matter. It's sold out.
That's the other thing. Yes. Something that I wanted to make sure, something that has been striking me is the show is on Broadway, but you know, you're only seeing, I don't know how many seats the New Amsterdam has, but let's say 1500 seats, 8 times a week. I don't know how many people that is over the 10 years it's been on Broadway, minus a year and a half. But on tour, probably thousands and thousands more people will see the show on tour than they will ever see it on Broadway.
Yeah.
So this is the version that more people will see, the tour version. And I'm wondering, is that properly representing? And that is not even just to do with the ensemble. That is to do with lower budget costumes and props and sets, budget effects.
But the wigs were bad last night. The projections were bad last night. Like, it's just, these are things that, like, again, like, Disney, the Mickey Mouse has a lot of money. Where is that money going? Like, I just don't see it on stage. And
something
I don't,
like,
know why.
The iconic carpet ride.
Yeah, let's talk about the carpet.
Is different than how it's done on Broadway. And more people are seeing this carpet than will ever see the Broadway carpet. And so, and there are obviously logistical reasons to bring it in and out of theaters. I absolutely understand those things. But, you know, that's what I think about when I'm seeing a tour is, This is the experience that most people are having of this show. This is the only experience most people are having of this show. Is it the best foot forward for theater, for this show, for Disney Theatrical? And does it perpetuate the idea that the Broadway is always better, that tours can never match Broadway?
Yeah. Because,
let's
again,
talk about
like,
that.
I can list many examples where, like, the caliber is the same, sometimes could be better, but, like, in this specific situation, again, have not seen the show on Broadway, but I feel like it just feels more expensive there, and I don't know, I'm just, like, as we were talking, I was like, you know what, I'm kind of interested to see what their grosses are, because we haven't done this in a long time. As of February, today is February 22nd, on day of episode record, Aladdin hits 99% capacity last week. Their gross for the week was $1,438,000. And their average
ticket
price...
on that theater, does it say?
No, it doesn't. It just says it's 99. Oh, sorry. It does. Well, seats sold were 13... No, that's not right. 1,727. Oh.
So 1,700 seats, the New Amsterdam Theater.
Yeah. And the average ticket price was $105 with the top ticket of $215. That is so high for a show that's been running on... This is the 10th anniversary.
In February. Over
$100
in February. In February.
And while we're here, because the other show that's running, obviously on Broadway, is still The Lion King, they're entering what? 25, 26 years?
Something like that.
Years? Yeah.
What, was it 1999?
It's something like that, yeah. It's been a long time. Obviously, it's coming back to Toronto next season. Lion King hitting $2 million this week with a 98% capacity and an average ticket price of $150. Like, wild. Now, here's the thing.
What's the capacity on the Minskoff?
The Minskoff capacity is 1,696.
So a little less, but basically the same.
Yeah.
1,700 seats.
No, I will
say,
like...
And this run of Aladdin here in Toronto, sold out. You cannot,
like,
get a ticket.
Literally sold out. So, like, my parents' subscribers, they tried to switch their date. They called Mervish. They said, we can't do anything for you. The run is sold out. There's a likelihood that we'll start selling box seats. I've noticed that they are adding obstructed seats in the first couple rows. I believe they're, like, chairs. And then my dad said that when they were there last week, they had a bunch of chairs in the lobby that they were adding to the dress circle sides. So those become available, like, every so often. But, like, no rush for this. Everyone's paying at least $179 for a ticket here. Like, where's that money? Show me the money on stage.
And that's the thing, right? That's the thing. They don't care, but they're not
invested. No, I actually don't think they care.
they're not invested in keeping the quality up because it actually does not matter. Because the tickets will be sold, the audiences will be full, and they'll move on to the next city.
Yeah.
I feel like we're being very harsh, but it is kind of... And it's not necessarily specifically about this show.
This is my thoughts on tour in general. I've, like, only...
Like, the last
again,
time
looking not,
came to Toronto.
Well, not every tour, but I just feel like the last few... I'm going to keep 42nd Street out of this because, again, I actually thought that there
was more of like
quite...
That was more of a West End transfer, but yes.
The UK tours, like, they're happy to be here. Like,
I low-key felt this way about Joseph. Sorry.
I know you felt this way about Joseph, and I also feel like this show is kind of similar with, like, set-wise. We're kind of in the same area.
And, yes, and the audience we're catering to, the way I felt Joseph was catering to children, Aladdin is catering to children and
families. I think the men in Joseph were giving me better dances than these guys were giving me last night.
I just, like, did not like Joseph, but yes. Yeah.
But, like, the last few tours that have rolled through here, Mean Girls, not impressed. Jagged, not impressed. Okay. What else has rolled through here recently? I feel like those are the top ones that, like, stood out to me of, like, oh, this feels like a tour. Whereas, like, again, walk two streets over to the Royal Alex Theater and those girls are giving you a performance of their life every night, 8 times a week. Like, I just don't understand. I, like, literally as I was driving home yesterday thinking about Aladdin, I'm like, remember Comet? Remember how incredible everyone was at Comet, yes, giving 110% performances for, and, like, 2 hours straight?
And where's the commitment? It's not at the biggest, and because it's not at the big Mirvish houses in Toronto, most people will not see it. Won't even know it's there. Yeah. Won't even know it's there, literally. And obviously, like, we, Mirvish is so important to the city. Now we're really, like, ragging on tours, and that's not the intention here. And but what I'm going to say, like, Mirvish is so important to this city in that they bring in these major shows to Toronto, and not even just tours, but bring in stuff from the West End and also invest in Canadian productions like the One Love Six that's happening, like the Lion King that's going to be happening next year, and hiring Canadian talent. So Mirvish is doing the work, but yes, there's something about this specific tour and some tours that we've noticed, that I've noticed, that have just not been up to the par of what I would expect for full price tickets.
Yeah, I also wonder, like, you know how you always hear that, like, the Phantom of the Opera switch out, like, every 6 months? Like, do we need to have cast overhauls, like, every year? Like, why are the same people doing these shows for this long? And I know the answer is, like, employment. And again, don't get me wrong. Some of these people, like, put them in a different show, I'm sure they would be giving, like, everything, and I'd be thrilled to see them. I just feel like, I don't know, it almost feels like they're a little uninspired, so I'm uninspired.
It's a hard job, and also, again, I'm wondering, like, how much rehearsal process, when a machine is already running, you know, you kind of have to rehearse and jump in and don't get that, like, long period of rehearsal before going in. Like, does that impact as well? Yeah, one thing, and maybe this is just emblematic, and again, this feels like, I don't know, not to pick on people.
Here's a raw, unfiltered moment. This is so mean,
but, like, let's go. during Friend Like Me, which is kind of the showstopper of Act 1, and the genie is coming out, the genie is delivering, the audience is eating this up, there's a tumbling section where one ensemble member came out and did a round-off kind of, like, layout back handspring, and I was like, great, and another ensemble member crossed him and did a round off, no tumbling added, just a round off, and then jumped at the end. And I was like, no one else in this cast can do a back handspring. it wasn't even like the other guy's tumbling pass was so impressive. It was one flip, and then this guy, I can do a round off. Put me in. I can do it. And I was like, no one else can do this. Is this what we're working with right now? With one tumbler.
Speaking of Friend Like Me. Obviously, like, as you said, Friendly, I say what we will about tours, whatever, like, this show is made for a very specific audience, yes, and that's fine.
And that audience was eating it up yesterday, and it's good.
100%. The people beside me, living their life. They were, like, loving it. The people behind us, crying. So I was like, happy for you. Great. Like, you win some, you lose some for me, but happy for you. And, like, so during Friend Like Me, my favorite moment, because I, like, 10 years ago, I don't remember this happening, and obviously, like, maybe the acquisition of, like, ABC, like, hadn't happened yet, but, like, the mirror ball Dancing with the Stars trophy really spoke to me last night.
We are Dancing with the Stars fans at this podcast. We watch every week. Yeah, when they brought up the paddles and the mirror ball trophy, it cracked me up. So I did remember when they, you know, he's like, I'm going to slow it down a little bit, and he starts singing Beauty and the Beast, like, Taylor's old.
This genie was so
funny.
He was so good, like, so good. Jump, you big neighbor, you ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend, you ain't never. why I think it's, like, kind of, like, disappointing about the show in general and, like, the lack of Genie, because I wish that they gave more to do. And just, like, speaking on the Genie in general, this was obviously a Tony-nominated and winning role for James Monroe Iglehart. Nobody yes. else in the cast was nominated or even, like, in contention, I want to say.
And that's okay. That's correct.
But I've pulled up the, like, 2014 Tony Award nominations for Aladdin. They were nominated for Best Musical. They were nominated sure. for Best Book, Score,
sure.
Featured Actor for James Monroe Iglehart, won Choreography for Casey Nicholas. So, like, that's not nothing.
But it's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but I'd be interested, like, I don't have a tally here of, like, the other Disney theatricals. I feel like they're all kind of the same, like... A couple, like Casey Levy was nominated, but like that's it, right? Was Patty nominated?
I think so. Maybe I actually don't remember.
I know. I feel like the standard for Disney theatrical is like one performer gets nominated and then like sparse awards here and there. And that's fine because as stated, like they don't need the awards recognition to get people in.
Casey was not nominated.
For choreographer.
No, I mean Casey Levy in for Frozen.
Oh, she wasn't?
No, they Frozen got 3 nominations. Best Musical, Best Book of a Musical, Best Original Score. That's it.
Her option up and Let It Go didn't get nominated?
She performed it, remember? The cold never bothered me.
Of course I remember.
We were at a bar.
While we're here, this is our PSA to the musical stage company. We would like to bring back the Tony Awards viewing party because we miss it every year.
I know post-pandemic, the Shoeless Joe's on King Street is closed.
Do you remember that you won? What did you win?
Tickets to The King and I. Let's talk about a tour. Let's talk about a tour that was so bad. The King and I? I did cry, though. Actually, really a vivid memory. Now that we're just talking about Toronto tours, a vivid memory I have of this is it was the first night of the tour. So, what? The Tony Awards were on a Sunday, won tickets, went on the Tuesday with another friend, not you.
No, because I think I had already seen it, like, or maybe I was seeing it
after. You were seeing it later. You were seeing it because it was the first night. And so, surrounded by subscribers, we're in the second row aisle seats.
I remember this story.
We're in the second row aisle seats, and show starts at 8 o'clock, which is already late for a 3-hour show for The King and I. Okay, 8 o'clock rolls around, 8:05, 8:10, 8:15, 8:20. 8:20 rolls around. People are, like, murmuring, like, what's going on? There's a woman. Everyone knows each other there for some reason. There's a woman who's talking
to subscribers all know each other there.
I know, but everyone's talking to all the rows. And we're like, oh, weird. And there's a woman who's like, I can't be here all night. I gotta go. Left. Left before the show even started. Left. Anyway, yeah, it happened. But again, some performances in that tour were just a little questionable. Speaking of, what was the son's name? The son, what's
I want to say Toby, son? But it's not Toby.
No. Terrible. That actor was terrible. Like, I was in shock. I'm finding out the character's name. Sorry to this actor. Who was just doing his best.
I actually feel like I blocked a lot of The King and I out of my memory.
How did you block that out? Not Tuptim.
No, not
Prince.
Tuptim.
Prince. Oh, I can't do this. To the Longhorn. But that was.
He was such a brat. That character was such a brat, though.
And that was something I thought about at the time. Like, Lady Tiang, who is a Tony Award winning role for Ruthie Ann Miles. And then when I saw it on tour.
Sorry, how did this turn into a King and I? Yeah.
Lady Tiang, which was a Tony Award winning role for Ruthie Ann Miles. But then when I saw it on tour, it's not that this actress was bad, but I feel like we lost why it was a Tony Award winning role for Ruthie Ann Miles, if that made sense. You know, I feel like so much of what made that production, you know, it was Bartlett Shear at Lincoln Center, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I didn't see any of that performance in this version. Anyway, just interesting things. Sometimes I just feel like it gets diluted the further away from the original production it is, especially with tours and long running Broadway shows like the Chicago tour I just saw. a mess.
I was going to say, that's the end of the sentence, the Chicago tour I just saw. But it's interesting because we were talking about this, but I was talking to my friend Jared, a friend of the podcast, and he was saying that he saw a Book of Mormon when it was recently here, which sold out.
Did he pay full price?
Jared, if you're listening to this, calling you out, paying full price for those tickets. Actually, he has a hack that I will not say publicly on this, but if you know me personally, you can message me and ask me about it, and I'll tell you. So he said that, like, we were talking about tours and, like, you know, we hadn't seen each other in a long time. We were, like, catching each other up on, like, our thoughts and feelings of, like, all of the theater in Toronto.
What did he love? What show was his favorite show? Back to the Future.
Comet. Oh, no, he hated Back to the Future. But he loved Comet, which we've recently spoken about Comet. We all love Comet. I specifically said, like, you know, Jared, like us, he's a two-time repeat, three-peat, four-peat, five-peat. Like, we love to see shows multiple times. He's in that same camp. And he's seen Mormon a few times. And I jokingly was like, can't believe you paid a full price ticket to see, like, another touring production of the Book of Mormon. And I said, how was it? Because I was telling him about your thoughts on, like, the touring Chicago, which those two shows, like, kind of overlapped at the same time. And his comparison was that, like, you know, the Mormons are these, like, young men, most of them recent graduates from university that are just like, this is my dream role, coming straight out, graduating, getting into the Book of Mormon and, like, singing my heart out on stage. And I was like, you know what? That makes so much sense because, first of all, to me, that show is, like, more of a vocally driven show than, like, I don't know, choreography driven. Mm-hmm. When we're comparing it to, like, Aladdin Chicago, it's, like, way more about the vocals than anything else. And, yeah, when do you get a chance to just, like, get up on stage and sing hello with, like, a bunch of your best guy friends and just, like, have fun?
And it does work for the show as well because the characters are so youthful versus, I don't know, other shows, let's say. No, it's not a hard and fast thing that I've noticed all the time, and we didn't see this recent production of Book of Mormon here in Toronto. But it is...
Well, mostly because, like, you could not return. You can't
return. No, I've seen Book of Mormon 3 times, and I cannot have it be my most seen show ever. I just will not allow that to happen. Though now, it used to be, but now we've got a couple shows in the five spot, so.
And we are hoping to make a six spot. We'll see if that happens. But yeah, back to this touring production of Aladdin. Something else we wanted to talk about.
What a tangent.
What a tangent. We got a little King and I, we got a little Book of Mormon, we got a little sidetrack.
Have we talked about the carpet?
No. Let's talk about the carpet. While we're on the train of things looking low budget, and then I swear we'll stop and we'll move on to something that was good. The carpet in Toronto, from what we remember.
Yes, the original pre-Broadway. Crazy. Like, insane.
It was outstanding. It was a highlight of the show.
It flew. It literally flew.
When you're like, oh, what's the best part of the show? You're like, Friend Like Me, obviously. But oh my God, that carpet, so magical. And I can't say the same for the touring carpet, which then led both you and I down, like, a hole.
We're on Reddit videos.
You Reddit posts of, like, how did that carpet fly in Toronto? Because it felt so different than last night. So, Steph, please give us the TED Talk on the magic carpet.
Okay, so based on my investigations, there's a couple things that could be. So the carpet on Broadway and the carpet in the pre-Broadway tryout essentially flew. And at that time, could not figure out how it flew, could not see wires, could not see an arm, could not see anything. And I think what they did that I think made it so wonderful was they had this giant moon in the background and the carpet flew in front of the moon. So you saw that it was not attached to anything anywhere, to your, like, naked eye. And that could have been, you know, like, it's obviously attached to something. It's not actually a magic carpet. Or maybe it's not. Who knows? But to our naked eye.
It's not actually a magic carpet.
To the naked eye, it looks like it's flying. And they're emphasizing that trick by putting it in front of a lit backdrop so that you can see that there's nothing there. And also, they had stuff... set pieces going underneath the carpet. I vividly remember in the Toronto production, there were, like, ensemble members dressed in all black with planets on a stick that were like running around the carpet and underneath the carpet to show, hey, there's nothing under here. And
I tried to find a picture. I cannot find one.
No, I think it was cut for Broadway. Maybe it wasn't. Someone tell us. But that was vivid memories, was the planets. And then based on watching a bootleg of Broadway, they kind of have a rustling fabric to show kind of clouds underneath the carpet ride, which also emphasizes the fact this is not an arm from the bottom of the stage. This is flying.
And the stars that are like attached to that back set piece are twinkling faster as they're moving.
Yes. So this carpet is flying. And it's really such a magical moment. Those actors are buckled in. And then the pièce de résistance is in full light during the finale. The carpet returns and Aladdin and Jasmine fly away on the carpet at the end of the show. So even if you're like, oh, it was a trick, whatever. No, full light, spotlights on it. It's flying. Great. So Toronto Tour that we saw in 2024, I was like, I wonder how they're going to do the carpet. It was an arm from the back of the stage, which is fine.
Oh, yeah. I thought you said, I was like, when you said 2024, I heard you say 2014. I'm like, no. You just described this whole thing and that's not what happened. Yes. Last night. Yes.
2024. And again, as someone who watches for these things, the backdrop was just a plain black backdrop with very few stars. Wasn't light lit at all. It was very dark on stage during Whole New World.
Yeah.
To disguise the fact that it was a giant kind of arm from the back of the stage. This is kind of the traditional way of doing a set piece like this, is kind of that arm. But what I think made it kind of feel budget was that it was so dark on stage. It didn't really even look like a carpet. It just looked kind of like a platform that they were sitting on. And the only lighting was really the one on the carpet, on their faces. Everything else was kept in a lot of darkness, so that you couldn't notice anything else happening on stage. And there was no other visual interest. There was a lot of fog, actually, at the bottom of the stage to try and distract. But yeah, there was nothing else visually interesting happening on stage during this time. And that was one of those things that was like a little disappointing.
Yes, yes. Just because that moment 10 years ago was like so magical that you're kind of like expecting, and everyone is there to see the magic carpet ride. Like that is what you are there for. I turned to my brother and said, it's giving Peter Pan's flight at Walt Disney World, which is also, when you see it as a kid, you're like, wow, magical. When you see it as an adult, you're like, really dark in here, guys. Can't really see anything that's going on.
Someone online described it as, what is it? It's not the Gringotts ride in Harry Potter, like when you're on that arm. Is it the
Journey Through Hogwarts? Good, though.
Yeah, but that's what they described it as, basically, like you're on an arm, and that's how
I will
it works,
say,
basically.
Like, a positive of that, it's really smooth. Like, they are moving, like, the rotations spinning. Are, like, really
sometimes I was like,
smooth.
They're moving a lot. Like,
they're moving
slow
pretty
it down
fast.
A little
like,
bit.
They're singing. Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. That was, like, a little... That was a little disappointing as well.
Understandable.
And yeah, I forgot that they flew at the end because that did not happen yesterday.
No, it did not happen last night. Understandable because a rig like that for that original carpet takes up a lot of room in the set. So it impacts what other set pieces you can fly. It impacts what touring theaters you can go to because they need to have that huge space for this contraption to make this carpet fly. But is it worth it? Maybe.
Do you... Again, back to Disney has so much money, guys.
I know.
Like, spend it.
But they
I'm
want
just
more.
Thinking,
they want
I'm
more
just
money.
Thinking of like the fight call when they obviously have to do the sword fights, and then like Aladdin and Jasmine in sweatpants in full light, just like on this platform,
on
like just making sure that it's everyone's safe and it's all good to go.
On the carpet, we're all good.
Let's talk about some positives from this tour. One, I will say a shout out to Aaron Choi, who's playing Iago, because he had the audience cackling all night.
He was so
my
funny.
Brother, my favorite side character. I loved him. He was so much fun. I will say that when Jafar came out with his giant snake scepter, I was like, oh my God, Steph, your Reputation Eras Tour outfit.
The scepter. Oh, I want a snake scepter. I should get one.
Like, should you just bring a whole staff with you that's a giant snake?
Yeah,
I think
pack it. Pack it in the suitcase.
Yeah, in the carry-on.
Fold it down. Or
actually,
just, you know, personal item. Carry it on the plane.
Carry it on the plane. Put it in the...
Overhead
baggage.
Imagine.
I'm trying to think who else was, like, highlights.
Yeah.
The genie, obviously, which we said. Also, Aladdin played by Adi Roy, Jasmine played by Senzel Amdi. She's stunning.
So beautiful. Really, really beautiful.
It always makes me laugh in these movies, not just Aladdin, but like when someone's trying to like disguise themselves, and her method of disguise was that she was wearing a hood. To cover her tiara. Like, love that.
It's just wearing the tiara still. Maybe take the tiara off to disguise yourself. Thought of that?
Yeah, like it created such a like big like platform for her head. Like, did we need it? Probably not. And then other highlights. Steph, do you want to talk about your favorite song in Act 2?
Yes, my favorite song in Act 2. I know Tara felt the same way. I was a fan of High Adventure.
Hi!
Bobcock, Omar, Kasim, and Ensemble. It was funny. They were giving comedy. And they were running, and then the lights were strobing, so they were running fast. It was funny.
That specific line of, like, we're not even moving at all. it was funny. It went on for like a chorus or two. Yes. Too long.
Yes, things went on for a long time. Absolutely.
I actually think that like this is always the main critique. This show is 2 hours and 20 minutes, and we can chop and trim. We can make it tighter, guys. But I will say, I think the best part about this entire experience is that so many kids are being brought into a theater for the first time, which is just very exciting to introduce any kid to the arts, but some of these kids are like very, very young. One of my old coworkers was sitting in front of me with her 2 kids, and just to watch him be so enthralled with what was happening on stage, looking at like the conductor screen on the TVs. There was a girl in the balcony wearing a Jasmine costume. It's just like, that's what this is for. So yeah. As much as we've like knocked this, I can't knock it when it's bringing kids this much joy. Like 100%. When the children are having the time of their lives, like I can't be upset that Aladdin is back in Toronto on tour. So I think that is the best part of this entire production.
Absolutely. That is the thing. I think sometimes maybe we're a little harsh, but the target audience of the show is children. And if we need to cut the budget on some things to bring it to more markets, to more audiences, so that more children get to see the show, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's magical for a child's first show to be a story that they already know with characters that they already love, and to get to see that brought to life with real people right in front of their eyes, and to create that magic for them. And I think we just are not the target audience for Aladdin at the end of the day, which is absolutely fine. Not everything is made for me, made for us. But to create that magic for families, and I think it is a wonderful piece for families to brought to, which is why it is 100% sold out. There's single tickets available, maybe. That's why it sold out, is because it is for families, and it's hard to find family entertainment.
Mm-hmm. I also want to shout out the orchestra. Everyone's sounding amazing yesterday. Real shout outs to the drums and like the sax, which this is also a really fun score to play. There's a lot of like jazzy undertones to it, but then also that like Middle Eastern music vibe. We're using a lot of different instruments that you don't hear every day. Feel the same way about The Lion King. I think that's the one thing that Disney does do really well, is their like big booming orchestrations. Everything sounds really good on stage. Before we wrap this up and rate it, what do you think is the next Disney theatrical? What should they be making next if you were to choose?
Which of their existing properties should they be working on bringing to Broadway?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we know they're working on Hercules.
We know they're working on Hercules. I will say, so at current time of episode record, we are fully under the impression that Beauty and the Beast will be revived on Broadway in 2025. It is starting its tour, I think, this year. And it is an anniversary of some sorts. That's why we think that 2025 is the year. Frozen just closed in London, but I believe they are playing elsewhere in the world. Actually, I have the Aladdin page open. So Aladdin is obviously playing on Broadway at the New Amsterdam. It's here right now, but it's on tour in North America. It's on tour in the United Kingdom. There's a production in Japan and in Spain.
When does this tour end in Toronto? What's the day?
March
17th.
And then like Frozen has, it's ending its run in the UK like relatively soon, but they also have productions in Germany and Japan. And then Beauty and the Beast kicks off its 30th anniversary tour summer 2025. So it could be part of the 2025-2026 Broadway season as a 30th anniversary revival. Mm-hmm. That being said, they are working on Hercules. But other than that, what is a property that you would like to see?
This is hard. This is a really hard one because obviously we've had, you know, Little Mermaid, we've had Beauty and the Beast, we've had Lion King. These are the classic ones. Just thinking of more recent ones. I loved Moana, the movie. I thought Moana was beautiful, and I think those songs are really good, written by people, you know, someone with a Broadway pedigree already. I think that would be fun to translate to stage. Who knows? I mean, they have the cruise ship version of Tangled, which
so I was gonna say, so the cruise ship version of Tangled, they actually did write a bunch of new songs. So I think mm-hmm. it's interesting that they've kind of like tested that out for audiences already to see mm-hmm. if they can do it. To me, this is a show that is like primed for stage. It's not that difficult set wise. They're only really in like a couple locations. Cast,
you know?
Really small cast. So yeah, Tangled definitely in the conversation as well. There's always been like sprinkling rumors of like Princess and the Frog, but I do not think we're ready for that yet. I think they really need to like work on that properly. We haven't talked about Tarzan, which I think was actually probably one of the better Disney theatricals as well when it happened in its day. I know I just said that we're going to wrap up, but I actually do want to talk about one more thing. We've talked about in an upcoming episode that you have not heard yet of the theme park attraction of this all, but I actually think that this is kind of like the opposite of what we will be talking about when you hear a Back to the Future episode. And that's because these Disney theme park performances, shows, whatever you want to call them, feel incredibly high caliber. And
why at the parks, you mean? At the parks.
At the parks. At the parks. I'm talking about Finding Nemo the musical, the greatest Disney theatrical.
Which has since been truncated. It's now like a 20-minute version versus the 45-minute version that we saw.
Which is a true tragedy, because why break something that is so good?
Go with the Flow is still in it.
I'm talking about that. Where's I'm talking my about
dad? I'm all alone.
I'm talking about like Festival of the Lion King at Animal Kingdom, but then also the Lion King show at Disneyland Paris, which is phenomenal.
That was just truly the Lion King. I think that was called The Rhythm of the Pride Lands, something like that.
Phenomenal.
Disneyland Paris, their entertainment, really, really good.
Show specifically, you can download it on Spotify and Apple Music. Phenomenal. The cast was outrageous. Bring those people around. And then, like, I'm trying to think what else. There was that like Frozen that was at the
Hyperion
land, the Hyperion that had the staircase that they didn't have on Broadway. So it's like, why are we putting money into the parks, but we're not putting money into the stage adaptations? I mean,
speaking of Rogers, the musical was at the Hyperion over the summer.
Rogers. I can do this all day.
Save the city. Da, da, da. So good.
Yeah. So, like, why is it working there? What do we think?
Bring Rogers to Broadway. I can do this.
That was Mark Shaman, Scott Whitman.
Yeah, it was Mark Shaman, Scott Whitman.
We're hiring real people for these shows.
No, because they wrote that, like, one song for Hawkeye, the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like, a bit in Hawkeye. And then, yeah. So good. So funny.
But yeah, I don't know why. It's just interesting to me that like the caliber in the theme park seems so high in comparison to like some of these like touring productions. It's just very interesting. It's also very interesting that as of a couple weeks ago, Disneyland is now with the Actors Equity. So I wonder what that means for the future. It'll be interesting to see. As these theme park shows, as these Disney theatrical touring shows continue to go on. But with that, let's rate it.
Okay, well. I am going to rate the Aladdin currently running in Toronto, the Aladdin tour, a 5 out of 10 little vests that Aladdin wears.
At intermission, we gave it a 6.
We did.
And I agree that at the end of the show, I am also giving this a 5 out of 10 Magic Lamps. Act one was definitely better, and I think act two started really good, and then we kind of like every time we lose the genie we lose a little bit of the show. So I don't know, my main campaign maybe for this is that I would just like to see a one-man genie show.
Just a little stand-up bit.
Yeah.
No, I loved him. He was so great. He was so fun. So high energy. The show really thrived when the genie was on stage. And anytime you were missing the genie, it's like a dimmer switch had been taken to the whole show.
Exactly.
And when the genie came back, it was back up. And yeah, I think you want a show that can, that all your side plots are running on all cylinders. And Aladdin is just not doing that.
Mm-hmm. So that's our thoughts on Aladdin. It is running at the Princess of Wales in Toronto until March 17th. If you are interested in trying to get like a single ticket, I would check Mirvish's website every day. Sometimes you can buy in advance, or you might have to wait until day of to see if they release any single tickets. But, unfortunately you are not going to find like four seats in a row at this time. So congrats to them on selling out this run and selling it out like very far in advance, of it ending. So everything that we just said, take it with a grain of salt, because they're doing what who are we to speak on this, because they're doing fine and people are having a great time. So yeah, and with that, or are you going to say something else? I feel like you're ready to speak again.
No. What I'll say is this season at Mirvish has been super crowd pleasing, every single show.
And I think next season will be too.
Next season as well. I really think they're nailing the show selections for the market that they're catering to. That doesn't mean that I'm always going to love everything that they're bringing, but it does mean that they are getting butts in seats to see theater. And we have
to stand. That's really all that matters.
We have to stand.
We have to stand. And with that, it's now time for Obsession of the Week.
Okay, my obsession. There is a show that has just closed on the West End, but it is a musical that is based on a very famous novel, The Time Traveler's Wife. Have you heard any of the music from this, Tara?
Yes. Okay, you clearly don't listen to these episodes back when I have already put a song as my obsession of the week.
I really don't.
Months ago.
Well, I listened to it yesterday. Okay.
What song did you want? I can't remember.
Okay,
see? It was the one from like their pre-rehearsal before they even got in the theater.
I think it's different. Well, I am behind. Tara is always on top of it. I was behind.
Well, yeah, because I'm editing it.
You look so, I don't always listen back, okay? I don't want to hear my voice again. tragically, it was running at the Apollo. So the show began previews October 7th, 2023, and it was originally scheduled to run to March 30th, 2024. It's closing February 24th, 2024. So the weekend, it's already done by the time you listen to this, but it's this weekend. And so I think that's why there was some Twitter noise about it, which was what prompted me to click. And so the song, I listened through to it, and the music is okay to me. It's nothing amazing, in my opinion.
It's actually giving, like, same kind of storyline, but like, well, not same kind of storyline, but same kind of genre. It's giving like a little budget The Notebook from what we've heard.
Yeah, I can hear budget The Notebook. It's kind of that same thing. Budget Bridges, budget something like that.
Yeah.
Bridges was pretty budget when it comes down to it, but budget, it's giving budget. But the song that I want to highlight is Journeyman. Rip me apart, shoot me straight through the dark. I'm a journeyman. Toss me about. Side and down, take me over, rip me apart, shoot me straight through the dark. I'm a journeyman, toss me about, fling me inside and out, take me over. I'm a journeyman. At the top of Act Two, and it's sung by the character of Henry, and that actor is played by David Hunter, and it's just where Henry explores what it's like to be this person who has no control over his life in the way that he is always traveling through time and he doesn't really have that control over it. And it's kind of a heartbreaking song to listen to because he knows that the way that it's impacting his family, the way it's impacting his own life, he knows he feels he's not going to like live as long as he would if this wasn't impacting him. And it's just like a beautiful emotional moment. So I really was struck by the song Journeyman, In the Time Traveler's Wife musical, sung by David Hunter as Henry. David Hunter was in the original West End cast of Waitress, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think you're right. I think the song that I spoke on a few months ago was called Wait For Me, but it was like a rehearsal room clip.
Yeah, earlier.
He's very good.
Yeah.
We get to bookend the run here. I had heard good things about this. Like, anyone that saw it said that it was, one, very sad, and two, like, pretty well done. Like, the book was very good.
I've heard no whispers of a transfer.
Oh, no. But I just, like, first of all, this season is over. You know what
it
kind of
has? It has ghost energy.
So then it's right up your alley.
I do love ghost. But do you know what I mean? It has ghost energy. Well, it is kind of. The male character.
He is kind of ghost. He's not a ghost,
but he's, you know, traveling through time. There's probably, I don't know if there's effects or anything.
Yeah.
And you have this, like, you know, wife. Anyway.
Yeah. Before we get to my obsession, as you just said, this was closing. We also must pay respects to a show that we never saw, never will see now, and A Beautiful Noise.
Beautiful Noise, the Neil Diamond musical. I think we will see it. I think it's going to be the seventh show. Watch me on this. Let me call that the seventh Mervis show for the 2024. It announced a
actually,
tour.
So we, maybe I will release
Nick Frattiani, American Idol winner. Is coming.
Maybe at one point I will release a photo of, so we recorded an episode, we recorded our episode with Jacob McInnes last week, and once they logged off, we sat here and tried to hypothesize the Mervis season because it was being announced the next day, and we, in like real time, basically found out that Back to the Future was transferring and Steph had a complete meltdown, and then I was like, mark my words, Sinatra pre-Broadway.
That's
your call. That's my seventh show. It's
I don't think we'll be so lucky. I don't think Matt Doyle is coming here. I think we're seeing Nick Frattiani in the Beautiful Noise tour.
With or without Amber Ardolino?
Oh, I don't think she's going to go on tour. She's too big to tour at
this point.
I also
feel bad because she just like left Back to the Future for like her first principal role and now it's not closing until June.
It's not closing until June. And number two, it's a really big deal to have your first principal role on Broadway.
It is a huge deal. Yeah.
And that is just a big step in a career. So, yes, we don't want our shows to close, but...
It is kind of surprising to me because, like, there's a built-in audience for the Neil Diamond musical.
No, let's talk about this. They kind of revolutionized in some ways. Let's pay respect to Neil Diamond the musical. Doing four matinees a week. I'm serious. Doing four matinees a week.
Pups.
Yes.
Let's give them standing ovation for
because
that.
Because they know that their audience is seniors, is Neil Diamond fans, people of an age with Neil Diamond. So... they're like, why are we doing five evening performances?
Let's
flip another matinee. Let's go.
When we were in New York in November, there were many people in the TKTS line that were buying tickets to A Beautiful Noise.
Yes, that is the TKTS audience.
I am actually quite surprised that this is closing because they were getting full price ticket sales for this
show. That's the other thing. Their average ticket price
was
very high.
While we're here, I have it right here.
Pull it up. So, their average ticket price really high, but their capacity is really bad.
Really high. Capacity 64%. Yikes. But average ticket sale, $125. Top ticket sale, $347.
No.
For the Neil Diamond musical.
Not $347.
Now, if Neil Diamond is not at the June 30th performance of A Beautiful Noise, I would be upset.
$125 average ticket price is quite high.
It's huge. I also, there's a new person on TikTok.
Because of just the way that the target audience is purchasing tickets. They're pre-planning. Yes. They're buying on telecharge. They're not waiting for hours in that TKTS line the way a younger
They're also
person
not
would.
Rushing in the morning, which I want to shout out this guy on TikTok, but I cannot remember his handle right now.
Brian, the business analyst?
Yes, who obsessed with you.
Yes,
thank you so much for doing the work.
Every Wednesday,
every Wednesday, he's doing it every day.
Yeah.
I watched one for Saturday yesterday. So there is a secret rush at A Beautiful Noise, $45 ticket. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, hey, I would love to hear Sweet Caroline in person.
And the other thing, I don't really think the line is very long. So I think you can probably show up at 10.
No one is there.
There's
not a single person there.
You don't need to be lining up an hour and a half in advance.
But it's just interesting to me because like the life of Beautiful on Broadway was so long and I felt that we were getting another Beautiful and I just feel like it's not that the industry is, as much as the industry has recovered, it also absolutely has not at the same time when a show like this that is built for tourists cannot last. So it's just like an interesting thing when you're proven completely wrong. We haven't even talked about my obsession of the week here.
Terrible, what's your obsession of the week? Sorry. We had to pay respect to Neil Diamond, the musical. The Beautiful Noise.
And you know what? Like, I would never see that on Broadway, but I absolutely will see that in Toronto. And you better catch me going, bop, 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 in the audience.
When they give us that press ticket, I'll be there. Anyway, go on, Tara. What is your obsession of the week?
Okay, my obsession of the week, I recently, like, found this YouTube channel, and I also think I found them because of Instagram, because Andrew Barth Feldman did, like, a cover with them. Anyway, this YouTube channel, this thing, whatever they are, Third Reprise, are you aware of them?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so it's this group that was created by, like, an artist, and what they do is basically do, like, spins on musical theater songs, and they had Andrew Barth Feldman do Popular. It was a funk version of Popular. His girlfriend, Helen, I can't remember her last name, but she did What I Did for Love. Is that what it's called from A Chorus Line?
Yeah.
A version of that. Wow. My obsession of the week, recently released on, like, streaming, is the Third Reprise version of Defying Gravity. Oh, my God. It is so good. Wow. The lead singer, her name is Amanda Burris. I am not familiar with her. She's got, like, jazzy, soulful vocals. It's a complete funk interpretation of Defying Gravity, which is, I think, when you think of that song, that is, like, musical theater. And, like, to put such a huge spin on it is, like, really exciting. Actually, one of the comments on YouTube is, like, this is what the Mean Girls movie wishes that it was, is, like, this kind of caliber of, like, really changing yourself and, like, making a name for yourself. Anyway, it's really, really good. The ending is insane. Her, like, riffs and the, like, sax and all of this, like, it's just, like, really good jazzy music. Nobody in all of us, no wizard that there is on our boys. I can't wait to see what they do next, if they're going to do, like, all of these different theater covers. I think they're doing One Day More, maybe not One Day More. It is a Les Mis song. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. I Dreamed a Dream. They just released I Dreamed a Dream. So I have not heard that yet, but they're all kind of, like, funky takes on these musical theater songs, and I'm obsessed.
Wow. So fun. So fun to listen to.
It is so fun to listen to. I love when we have, like, new takes on songs that I obviously, like, know inside and out. Like, literally at the theater yesterday, when No One Mourns the Wicked played on the TVs twice, I was like, oh my God, someone's calling my name. Like, I just feel...
It makes you hear the songs in a different way. It makes you listen to the lyrics in a different way to hear someone else emphasize different words or...
I feel like it's kind of like... Somewhere. It was last year when you had a few songs by, like, Ellery Ward, which were, like, different interpretations of these, like, classic songs and made you, like, feel the lyrics in a different way. So,
yes, absolutely.
Music, so cool. So good. Like, so fun. So good. So, yeah, that's my obsession this week. That's our thoughts on Aladdin. And next episode, we might have some special guests. So
we're so excited.
So you'll have to wait for that. And in the meantime, you can listen to any of our other episodes by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Off2BUA Podcast with the number 2, and on TikTok at Off2Broadway.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.